Well, it's sort of interesting idea using a documentary format to interview yourself through someone else interviewing you.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like the whole question of how you make work, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like you go sort of.
Yeah.
It becomes an analogy.
Yeah.
For
but again, you know, the underlying impulse was unthought out.
Mm.
I mean, there was something about the material, there's something about the process of having three different people all with the same voice interviewing each other, and then that whole process being talked about by another three people with the same voices, and in the end everybody getting confused about what was what. Well, that's just what emerged, actually.
Mm.
You know, it just emerged from the way I did it.
Mm.
Then the second half of the piece, I think, was very much a response to my real response to the implications of the questions.
Mm.
The emotional and psychological disturbance that's produced. Mm. If you actually really ask yourself the questions that I was supposed to be answering, it brings up an enormous amount of rage, and anger, and because you feel, because you know, you're being threatened and your whole power base is being threatened.
Mm.
Particularly at that particular stage in my life, and probably in my relationship with you, and having to face, you know, all those things.
Mm. Hello? Yes, speaking. I don't know. You'll have to ask him.
That's a sort of a freshwater crayfish. You never catch it. Oh, look at it.
I love the way they stick to me.
I mean, it's like the quarter was the finish of that sort of...
Sort of, yes.
In a way, it was
yes.
sort of like a...
Yes.
Doesn't mean it won't come up again in another way.
No.
But maybe that's the whole thing. Maybe what you do is you, as you come to terms with the whole thing about your father...
Yeah.
You'll never lose some of that sense that we were talking about this
right.
morning of there's a pocket there that
yeah.
was never filled,
yeah.
you know. But maybe what you do is you re-engage with it in a different way, from
yeah,
a
perhaps.
Different perspective.
Perhaps.
So it comes yeah. less out of a sense of loss and
yeah.
more out of a sense of acceptance that that's... I mean, there'll always be that lingering thing.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why, who knows, I mean, who would ever know, but maybe that's why you have an ear more for sounds that have a twist of nostalgia or sense of this
yeah.
sense of using distance up close,
yeah.
some of those things, because they express some of those feelings.
Well, a lot of people have said... That's one of the a lot of students actually have said to me. That's the one element that they hear in all the works. Nostalgia.
Nostalgia. Oh right. That's
yeah.
interesting. Have they?
Yeah, they have.
Oh.
I got the idea that he was extremely competent, that he was very skillful, and that he could do anything with these tools. That he could make anything, that he could solve any problem, that he was absolutely invincible in everything, but particularly in the context of this workshop environment. Thank you. being in the workshop with him, which really excited me the most, was the possibility that I might have physical contact with him. And I realize now that this was something which I really, really desired enormously, was this possibility of actually touching him and being touched. It wasn't in the front of my mind, it wasn't a sort of a conscious thing. But now, in retrospect, when I think back, the one or two occasions when there was physical contact, particularly in the context of these workshops, this was really special.
Well, as you know, like the other thing is like in the quarter.
Yeah.
It's like the opposite thing happens.
Yeah.
Your voice is narrating quite personal
yeah.
stories.
Yeah.
And the musical things there yeah. are actually interpreting.
Yeah, like father and son.
Yeah.
I went back into town again tonight. And on the way home, I decided I'd like to celebrate by having a decent meal, not just the takeaways I've been having. It's quite a small town, and there aren't a lot of eating houses, but I'd noticed this place called the Mill Restaurant, so I thought I'd go and have something to eat there. When I got inside, I realised it was a pretty ordinary sort of place. A Pakistani proprietor sat me down and gave me a very ordinary looking menu. So I thought, oh well, I may as well have an ordinary dish. So I ordered sausages and vegetables. And he arrived back with two sausages, some chips, and the vegetables consisted of lukewarm boiled carrots and parsnips cut up into rather large chunks. Anyway, I sat there sort of grimly eating through my celebratory meal on this formica table, this very un-Irish establishment. When something happened. Coming out of a speaker just above my head was canned music. Suddenly, I recognised the song. It was called Father and Son. It's very well known. It's a song I've liked for a long time. It goes, you know, but I know that I have to go away. I know I have to go. Can't remember any of the rest of it, but the words really struck me. The song documents an interaction between a father and a son, which I thought was so interesting, and the son realizing that he has to leave.
All the times that I've cried, keeping all the things I knew inside. It's hard, but it's harder to ignore it. If they were right, I'd agree. But it's them they know, not me. I'm going to go to the hospital.
That you're like it's the reverse. They're interpreting your what you're talking about,
well, the,
putting a bloom on it, you know, and a sort of an ambience around it.
In the quarter, all of the sign sounds are used very, very, very carefully for their reference. People that don't think had much to do with me at all, but they all said have a cup of tea. So.
See, the quarter to me seems like there's the quarter, there's
sleep exposure.
Last night I dreamed of my grandfather.
I guess that's what kids do, they just react with people when they don't think about their reactions.
I rang him from the city. He was in the hospital, waiting to die.
Those two in particular seem very alike to me.
Yeah.
In some way.
Yeah.
About because of the content and
yeah.
because they're sort of
yeah.
they're linked to about an identity thing through
yeah.
a family member.
Yeah.
And then the road to the post office changed into a kind of arcade. And coming towards us was a procession, a religious procession of some kind. It was full of dark red. We didn't know what it was. Good old Robe Street, he said, remembering his life and giving it to me. Ah, it's all in a name.
All I'm saying is that the using sounds which are identifiably functional, in other words, they go beyond their form and speak about life situations, the accepted wisdom is that you need to take what they're referring to into account.
Yeah, because, like a train or a plane.
Because the listener is going to. The listener is going to not say, they're not going to listen to the sound as an abstract noise, they're going to listen to it as a train or a plane or whatever.
But isn't it important what you put it with then, rather than actually...
Yes, it is.
When you say taking it into account...
Well, that's what I mean. It is important. Mm. But see, I haven't got any justification, artistic justification, for... I can't say why I've used those particular sounds in the, with one another.
Well, you know, the thing is, I think that, I think in all your electroacoustic works, really, is this feeling that it's like putting you in an atmosphere of sounds, so that you can both imagine the atmosphere that is being offered to you, and you can also bring your own interpretation into it. So that, you know, if you're listening and it's sort of, everything's got a sense of slightly far away, and you hear a plane going by, or a train rushing into your face, or whatever. I mean, it gives you a sort of like a landscape, a soundscape that's quite, both quite specific and not.
Yeah. I suppose so. What I'm trying to say is this business about the, because originally, you know, I thought we talked about this in the previous discussion about, you know, the French idea of reduced listening.
Yeah.
The idea that you can record a concrete sound and then forget about where it came from and just use it as a sound.
Yeah.
You know? And a lot of pieces were made like that, early electronic pieces. Mm. And then, like, people like Trevor Wishart say, no, you can't possibly do that. Like when I played Trevor Wishart Songs of the Little Lady, his criticism was, you haven't taken enough notice of the way people are going to hear some of these sounds. They're going to hear them as reference sounds, and they haven't been tied up enough, they haven't been clinched enough in terms of their reference. They've been used far too much just purely as sounds.
What does that mean? What does it mean? How in a sound way do you reference them properly?
Well, you have a narrative, like Red Bird. You know, Red Bird has a narrative. A Political Prisoner's Dream is its subtitle.
Oh, right.
And everything that's going on there, Wishart can translate relative to his scenario.
But can others?
No, a lot of people don't.
No.
A lot of people hear the sound more abstractly than he does. But he's saying it can also happen the other way. He's saying if you are using a
When you say narrative, you mean he's got a title.
He's got a title, he can go through and every single sound.
But it hasn't got a narrative in a verbal sense, you mean? It's got a...
Well, no, but
it's got a sound narrative.
No, it's got a conceptual narrative.
Mm.
Like the transformation of the word listen to birdsong is the idea of a word spoken by a prisoner actually being given flight, given air. And that's the way he interprets it. That's right. What it's there for.
Yes.
Well, what I'm trying to say is that it seems to me that what I'm rethinking Wishart's principles.
Because you use quite a lot of personal and autobiographical material in some way or other, whether it's, you know, in chunks or sliced up or whatever, but that has informed. It's sort of, so there's like these two strands. There's this sort of, like you were saying, it's the sound, what you notice is. See, it's interesting because you're talking about that electric jug.
Yeah.
So what you hear is the electric jug boils, the little thing flicks off, makes a wee sound, and then there's the bubble, 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 and it goes. So the whole...
The water goes off the boil.
Yeah. So it's sort of like a complete event.
That's right.
As a sound.
Yeah.
There were all sorts of amazing things under the house. There used to be a hand crank record player, the old acoustic kind, with the replaceable needles. There were recordings of Irish-American ballads sung by Bing Crosby and other singers I can't remember. It was dusty and hot. I can remember the unique smell of the record player. I think it was the velvet lining of the lid.
But that partly informs how you choose sounds and how you use them when you're making a piece. They've got to sustain that sense of either whether it's engineered or not, but a sense of a cadence, a natural cadence and form that sits within the sounds.
Yes, but see, I mean, here's an example of what I mean. Sometimes I'll do that. Other times I'll get a texture to a certain point, and then I'll think, oh, there aren't enough high frequencies in this. It hasn't got enough glisten. And so what I'll do then is I'll ferret around in my head and think, what sound do I know that's got high frequencies in it?
Right.
And in this particular case, one of the ripple recordings from Coraline. Treated it in a variety of ways and then just mixed it in to the particular mixture that I was doing. Now, that had nothing to do with water at all. You never hear it as a ripple.
No.
But it's actually produced that particular result. Now, there's an example of just thinking purely sonically.
Yeah, right.
Whereas at another point, I'll use a recording of Littleton Port working from behind Littleton Township, way up high. You know? And it has all this faraway ambience. It's a sonic landscape. It has. It's like a picture, a painting of a port, a working port from a high vantage point, you know what I mean? There's nothing specific about it. You couldn't tell it was a port. But all the sounds have got the correct acoustic quality to give that feeling of distance and activity that's happening a long way away.
So when you're thinking of the sounds, the sound, you just hear the sound with your ears, and you have an internal sense that you like it to be pretty. then there's actually thinking through how those sounds actually work in the piece.
Well, sort of, but it's not a thinking through, it's a feeling through.
No, yeah.
It's just shifting
an ear,
things
trained
around,
ear. And,
shifting things around, yeah. So when those big piano notes happen, they're just a big note that decays. There's no other musical movement in them. They come from the piece, but they've been worked on to make them bigger. And then there's white noise. Then, that's what enabled me to use little simple phrases from the piece. And within coming out of the ambience of things in a variety of ways, you know. Like something will happen and you hear people moving around and they're walking about and they're laughing and talking and so forth, and then suddenly you hear this piano music that's playing, you know. I think also there's the clapping in that piece, which is really important. And I mean, there you are. The clapping was a simple setting of the folk song. I decided I wanted to set the folk song, I wanted to give it some sort of rhythmic flavour. And I thought it needs to be really basic. So I'll get some sort of a drum-like sound and a clap, and maybe a little brass bell or something that dings every now and then. And that's it. That's what I did.
Rhythm quite important.
Well, it came from the song. But then, of course, you know, we agreed that the complete setting of the song shouldn't be there. But all of the clapping patterns that I'd used in other parts of the work, because I reckon they made sense relative to the complete setting, were still kept, even though the complete setting was removed.
Right, so you maintain
and
the
so
residue.
The clapping suddenly assumes an enigmatic life of its own. It is related to the song, you can, because it does accompany it every fragments of it.
And it's actually a bit of a mystery as to why things, I mean, why should the Moscow Underground work with hand clapping a snatch of a folk song? I mean, why should they?
It's not so much the specific location of the reference, it's the category. In other words, what happens a lot, and say, and I was all actually aware of this almost at a cognitive level a lot of the time. There's one part in say where there's background wash and the voice is singing nuts to your daddy, and there are other vowels from that that are stretched out and reverberate in the distance. There's a lot of distant stuff going on and so forth. And then suddenly this happens right in front of you, you know, for no reason. And then you drop back into the distance and then it happens again, and eventually it turns out to be the accompaniment to the song. It's the fact that that's an acoustic event, that it's not, you know, it's a recognisable, you can hear skin on skin, or you may not even recognise it as a clap, but you can recognise it as a real event.
Like a crack, yes.
It's a real event of some sort. It's not synthetic. I reckon the ear picks that up.
And what are you saying?
What I'm saying is that is a... an expressive juxtaposition with everything else that's going on in the background.
So is that like sort of putting the person right in front of you in
Yeah, sort of, except that it's this enigmatic clap that's being put in front of you. I mean, who's clapping? You don't really know. Is it the singer that's clapping? Well, you're never given enough information to know.
But do you think you think about sounds at that level as they're happening to your ears?
I don't.
I think what you respond to is this sudden rhythm.
Well,
or
yes.
Alteration that's
but
put
what
up.
I'm trying to say is that you don't think about it, but it has an effect on you. It has a very strong effect. You accept it automatically, you know. And I mean, what that does also is it gives tremendous sudden dimension to the soundscape.
Yes.
Because you're suddenly brought right up in front of your face and then dropped out again. So there's that. But that could be done with any sound that was up close. What I'm saying is the clapping has a particular kind of quality.
Immediacy about it, is it?
Yes, or roughness, or folkiness, or realness. Realness, which actually contributes to the expressiveness of it. its relationship with everything else.
Well, it's a sort of a soundscape in a sense that you, because you do that, you give depth and dimension, you push some things away and you categorise things. You say, this is more important right now, that's happening back there. So don't, that's just, we'll think about, it was what I was trying to say about the stones. You know, the stones arrive in the river at a certain point.
Right.
But to get there, I mean, if you look at them and think about them and watch the river, you realise they've had to journey.
That's right.
And so what's happened to them on the way down the river? It's sort of like the stone saying, well, I'm here now and you're seeing me here now. But, you know, all sorts of other things have happened to me. And it's like that with what you're doing. You're saying, well, look, okay, there are other sounds happening back there. But just keep your ear on those. Right now I want you to notice this.
Yeah, that's right.
And then what happens is that goes back.
That's
so
right.
It's sort of like giving sounds priority and weight.
Yeah.
Is it?
But yes, it is, absolutely. But it's done in a completely almost serendipity way.
Yes, and then what that does is it gives you a sense of being, because when I hear those works, I always hear them like I'm hearing them in the round. I mean, I don't know what I mean, you know.
Yeah.
It's like I feel like, and it's got nothing to do with where I'm sitting in the room, it's actually to do what happens in my head when my ears hear them. I hear I'm inside like a drum or something.
Yeah, right.
And the sounds are being fed to me.
Yeah.
How?
Yeah.
You know, they are constructed, but that gives it the story. Rather, it loses a consecutive nature. You know, even though obviously it is happening
right.
consecutively,
right.
Because what happens is the sounds are prioritized, and that's different to like making some sounds loud and some sounds soft and variety and all those things. It's actually a very different feeling, because all of the sounds in the end come back with a different little bit on them,
right.
A little bit of personality
that's
added.
Right.
They've travelled down the river a bit further and now they're presenting themselves to you with a little bit more of their story.
Yeah.
But their story you don't ever really see. You sort of maybe drag slightly through it.
And that's why, you know, I go through that process of, I think I finish the work and sometimes I'll even make a CD of it and send it to somebody and then realise, oh no, I haven't.
Mm.
I've got to do some more. Or I'm going to take a bit out, or I'll do this, or change it, or condense it, or something, you know.
It's got to settle down.
Yes, that process can take a long, long time. And sometimes, it took me 10 years to get to the point with Parade, where I finally got something which, well, was as good as I could do, you know.
But a beautiful sombrero on and a lovely Palomino. There's a gorgeous Mexican at the back with a beautiful sombrero on and a lovely Palomino horse. There's a gorgeous Mexican at the back. There's a gorgeous Mexican at the back with a. Gorgeous Mexican at the back with a beautiful sombrero on and a lovely Palomino horn. There's a gorgeous Mexican at the back with a Mexican at the back with a beautiful Mexican at the back with a gorgeous 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 Mexican at the back with a gorgeous
mentioning Parade. How different do you think Say is from Parade?
I don't think it's very different.
No, I don't either.
I think
Parade is much... I would say Parade has much less space in it, ear in it.
Yes. Oh, yes. It's got much less...
And it's much more like the clap, you know, it's like much more in your face.
Yeah, it is. But basically, it's got a lot of the similar sounds.
Yeah.
And the approach is similar, although it's probably Parade's more didactic. It's more doco than Say. Say is probably it's quite a breakthrough, I think, that work, because it's, and it was happened when you said, I don't think the song should be there complete. And that was absolutely right. And actually, as soon as I took that out, the whole piece just went clunk. And it wasn't together until that moment, you know. And that's what I was incapable of doing with Parade. I just was incapable because I was so inside the material, so completely.
Well, it was sort of different material.
Oh, it's completely different material. Yeah. But basically,
and it was very hard to make those spaces. Yeah. But you know, there's something that I think is there also, and it's not in. Well, I don't know, I'm just trying to think. There's something to do with a rhythm. They're very. I mean, it seems strange to say about electroacoustic works, I suppose, but I think some of them are very rhythmic works.
Yeah.
I think Say is.
Yeah.
You know, The Little Lady is.
Yeah.
I think Parade is.
Yeah.
I think. See, on listening in, I think is a much more. I always think that is a much more like filmic work. I think not a film score, but in the sense it's got bigger gestures, bigger.
Yeah.
It's less.
Yeah. Well, that's actually moving from one whole way of working to another way, really.
Yeah.
I mean, and it took a long time, 3 years.
Yeah.
And it was lots.
See, I think it's actually a really complex and interesting work that we're actually.
Well, when I listen to it now, actually, it convinces me more and more all the time. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's lots of things about it that are sonically truncated that I could do much better now.
Mm.
You know? But actually, there are some moments in it which I think are just brilliant. You know? I mean, they're just wonderful.
Mm.
Leave it.
Oh, that is where they landed, John.
No, leave it, because I'll go in those little things. Leave it.
We are recording.
Put the next lot up.
Okay, let's start.
I'll do one now, you do it, right?
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. What?
Yet.
Yet. Yet. Yet him. Yet Smith. Yet a Finn. Yet. Mifinwa. Yet Nitwit.
Yet Mifnitwit. No, it's not the word, is it? Now try that.
Gidja.
Yet Mifnwits.
Gidja.
Yet Nifnwits. Yet
Nifnwits.
Yet Nifnwits.
Sigidjin. 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 Gidgen, gudgen, skidgen, twimifin, skidgen, twimifin, yet, skidgen, skidgen, twimifin, skidgen, yet, skidgen, twimifin, yet, skidgen, twimifin, yet. Scudgin Timothy yet. Scudgin Timothy yet. Scudgin Timothy.
Funny sort of way, Say feels really, really like it, like I've hit the target, absolutely dead on. You know? And yet, when I try and work out what the fuck it is that I've hit, I've got no bloody idea at all. You know, whereas you can take The Little Lady or any other piece I've made just about, I can tell you basically what the piece is sort of about. You know? But I can't with this one. And yet, I can remember saying often. My problem with my pieces is that they're about things. Wouldn't it be marvellous to make a piece that wasn't about something, because then it would be real music.
Yeah, right.
Because you can't say what a piece of music's about. You know? Right. And now when I've done it, I feel like I've cheated.
Because it's not about something.
Because I didn't know what I was doing.
Oh, right. There's no win.